Born and bred Irish Catholic in the Need I say any more?
I was born in 1957, exactly 1 year after my older brother, for which he was forever resentful. He did not like to share his birthday with me, and was very clear about that for my entire life, you know. we were a pretty interesting family. There were 11 of us, if you include my parents, 13. Our family was the epitome of chaos, the absolute epitome of chaos. My father loved beer. My mother loved wine. When my father hit the beer, the boys turned the television on and watched sports with him. When my mother hit the wine, everybody hit the deck and got out of there. we went to church every Sunday. My mother was actually decorated by Lyndon B. Johnson. We got to go to Washington, D.C., and got to actually be on a battleship because she got one of those honors that they give to civilians because she was such an outstanding woman. And so we were just slightly less than perfect on the outside. Every single year, the Boston Globe, which was the newspaper in Boston, would come out and take photographs of my entire family, you know. I was the only girl, so the boys would be all lined up, and I'd be all frilly and lovely looking, and, you know, my parents would be like, do not say a word, just stand there. And I'd be like, okay. And that's what we'd do. We'd just, you know, they'd take pictures, they'd say what a wonderful family we were, and then off we went for another year. you know, like any good, less than perfect family, there was a tremendous amount of physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. And I am here to say it is a miracle that I survived that. It is a miracle that I actually got sober. And it is a miracle that I stand before you today and tell you that I have a life second to none. None. Wouldn't trade my life for any of yours. Trust me. No matter how good it is, it cannot possibly be better than the joy and happiness that I feel today in this program. You know, I barely survived, you know, my childhood, went off to college, and I was free, absolutely positively free. I was free to learn about things like LSD, hashish, PCP, and needless to say, I discovered fraternities. Okay. Fraternities are big on kegs of beer and alcohol and women. So, you go to a fraternity, you get lots of alcohol because you're a woman. And you meet lots of guys. And you have a blast. And you wake up the next morning and you think, wow, that was a grand time I had. If I could just remember it, it would be even better. You know, it would be so, so much better if I could just remember it. And then you look and you see all your clothes on the floor. They're covered with vomit. And you think, wasn't really that bad, was it? I mean, I don't remember it, so it really wasn't that bad. You know, I would have told you, especially when I first got sober, that I had a blast with alcohol right from the beginning. I would have said, I had fun with it, you know? And then alcohol turned to me. That's bullshit. Excuse me. Alcohol never, ever treated me well. And it took me getting sober and putting some years together to realize that. Right from the very beginning, alcohol started taking things away from me that I didn't even realize it was taking. It took away my dignity, took away my reputation, took away my honesty. You know, it made me into a woman who I hated when I got sober. I absolutely hated her. I thought that she was the most despicable woman on this planet because I had done every single solitary thing a woman shouldn't do. And not only that, I was the only one that had done all that stuff. There was no other woman that had ever done things as bad as I had done. You know, absolutely not. You know, and every single time that I walked into a bar of fraternity or I sat down with a drink, I thought, this time is going to be different. This time is going to be different. You know why? Because this time I'm going to be able to figure out how to drink perfectly. Right? It's going to be drink number four. That's the one. You know, I had the most amazing number of machinations and solutions to not getting drunk. Some of which my friends look at me today and think, you didn't really do this. And I'm saying, I'm an alcoholic. Of course I did this. You know, somebody told me, this is, you know, people think this is weak, but it seemed perfectly rational at the time. Somebody told me you drink a cup of vegetable oil, it will coat your stomach, and then you won't get drunk. That is not true. You get drunk. If you eat bread which has been soaked in milk, yes, that will absorb the alcohol, and you'll just get a nice buzz, but you won't get drunk. Yeah. Somebody told me if you smoked pot before you drank that you wouldn't get drunk. Not true at all, you know. Somebody told me if you drank and then smoked pot, you wouldn't get drunk. Not true at all, you know. So my rationale when I first started drinking was that I discovered that wine had too much sugar in it, and that's why I would get hangovers, so I stopped drinking wine. My favorite was Rianini Lambrusco. Oh, good stuff. And so then I switched over to White Russians. Were they not the Nads? Oh, my God, they were great. They were great. But then I discovered the milk was causing hangovers. Yes, it was the milk. So I switched to Black Russian. Right? And then I discovered that if you drink two or more alcoholic beverages together, that can cause a hangover, so I went straight to whiskey. No water, no ice, neat. I didn't want to take any chances. Along the way, I actually happened to pick up quite an extraordinary guy, who at the time I thought was kind of a jerk, but I picked him up anyway and married him. I tried to turn him into an alcoholic, and I spent a good deal of time and energy doing this, because I think if you're going to go out to a bar and drink, right, and you're married, then the person with you ought to drink too, right? I mean, does that make sense to you? You should go home drunk. And it seemed reasonable to me, you know. This was a very long, arduous, and complete failure of a process. I mean, finally, when I get this guy to drink, guess what he likes? Strawberry daiquiri. I mean, you get like, my stomach would get sick from the sugar before I get drunk. I mean, think about that thing, you know? I'm thinking, why would you even think about drinking strawberry daiquiri? And then at the bar one night, we're ordering drinks, and he orders a strawberry daiquiri, and the guy says, would you like a regular strawberry daiquiri or virgin? And he looks and says, well, what's a virgin? He says, that's without alcohol. He says, I'll take the virgin. I'm like, well, that was really pointless, that whole exercise, wasn't it? You know, I'm thinking, I think there are just people that just are not meant to drink, and he's one of them, you know. So, you know, it was quite a career, you know. It was really quite a career. I drank for 13 years, not very long, let me tell you. And I lived in 13 or 14 different places, had 13 or 14 different phone numbers and 13 or 14 different jobs. We lived in New England, actually in New Hampshire. He was a farm boy, so we moved to New Hampshire. We moved every year at the beginning of December. I considered that to be a very appropriate time to move out of one apartment and move into another, because I wanted another apartment before Christmas, right? And he was good. He actually put up with me moving in the middle of winter every single year. And let me tell you, when I got sober and we stayed in the same place for 4 years, he thought he'd died and gone to heaven, you know? He was like, wow, we've had 4 Christmases in the same place. What an idea, you know? Poor guy. And so, you know, it was so much of a blast out there that, you know, on December 31st of 1988, I was sitting in my apartment with a loaded gun in my lap, and I wanted to kill myself. That's how much fun it was. I thought, if this is as good as it gets, then what's the point? I mean, really, what's the point? You know, I did not know about any organization that could help me. I didn't even know I had a problem with alcohol. You know, I knew I had a problem with living, and I knew that the alcohol was what was helping me stay alive. You know, the scary part about it was on Christmas Day, which was my very last drunk. I drank eggnog loaded with vodka. And I got what was called drunk from the neck down. My head was going, my body was a mess. And I thought, oh my God, the alcohol is not working. Where do I go from here? Where do you possibly go when the alcohol stops working? Where do you possibly go when that's your only solution to life? You know? Where do you go when you come from a perfect childhood, a perfect family? Where do you go when you come from perfection and nobody knows that was less than perfect? So I sat there with a gun in my lap, loaded, and I thought, I can't imagine what else that I should do. I called the Good Samaritans. The gentleman picked up the phone and started talking to me. I hung up the phone. And I remembered, through the back recesses of my mind, I remembered a friend of mine, David, saying to me, you know, Diane, if you ever need help, give me a call. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. And so I called him. I had no idea what he was going to help me with. All I knew was it was a gun or David. You know, the gun was permanent. David was not. I called against the answering machine. He called me a couple of hours later. He said, how are you doing? I said, fine. He said, I'll be right over. And he came over with another woman. I will tell you, I remember absolutely nothing whatsoever about that 12-step call, because I didn't even know it was a 12-step call. I made a lot of coffee. They went, wah, 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 wah. That's all I heard. And then my husband walked in, because it was New Year's Eve, of course, with 2 large bottles of Dom Perignon. And I said, why don't you guys head out, and I will call you tomorrow. And instead, David walked my husband outside and never saw those bottles again. And, you know, a couple of people said, you couldn't have waited till the next day. I'm thinking, you know, that really wasn't the plan. That wasn't the plan. You know, I had not a clue what Alcoholics Anonymous is. Because back in those days, there wasn't big flashy ads, and we didn't have rehabs, and there wasn't all this stuff about it. I didn't know anything about it. So David tells me he's going to take me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm thinking, What kind of a name is that? Who would call themselves that? He said, just come. So I thought it was one of these kind of things. You come in, you sign a book and say, I'm going to stay sober, and then you come back next month and check in and say, I'm still sober, and thanks very much. I had no idea what this whole thing was about, you know? And it was, the first 30 days was a fog. All I remember Dave saying was that I had to sit up front, which is like, why? He said, because you're not going to hear anything unless you sit up front. I'm like, I just, you know, do you have to do this to me all the time, you know? And then he told me I had to talk to women. That was an absolute no-no. There was not a thing in the world that was going to get me to talk to women. I wasn't going to even talk to men, and never mind women. And they were both out as far as I was concerned in terms of the species, you know. So, you know, David gave me the lowdown on stuff, you know. Yeah. One day at a time, think. You got to get a sponsor. You got to get a home group, da-da-da-da. Well, I figured if one day at a time was good, then 7 days at a time was better. I figured if one home group was good, then seven home groups was even better. And I figured if one sponsor was good, then zero was even better. And I can tell you, when I made it to 30 days of sobriety, I was shocked. In fact, I didn't even know I had 30 days until David told me. And here's what I recognized. I recognized that in that 1 month that I hadn't wanted to kill myself. That one day at a time I had actually stayed sober. And my life had actually not gotten worse. I'm not sure I could recognize whether it had gotten better, but it had not gotten worse. So I was sitting there thinking, there might be something to this. There really might be something to this. And really, what did I have to lose? I mean, you're talking about AA or a gun. You know, at some points, that entered my mind, but I always figured, you know what, if AA didn't work, the gun was always there. Right? But guess what? I'm here because AA worked. It worked. It gave me back my life. It gave me back my life and more. It did for me what nothing could ever do before. You know, when I picked up that first drink, I picked it up because I wanted to fill that huge black hole inside of me. That mucky place that we don't even like to look in when we're out. I don't want to know what's in that black hole. Never mind deal with it. Right? I thought the alcohol would fill the hole. It does. For about 6 to 8 hours. Then guess what? You wake up the next morning, the hole's still there. Guess what I discovered in AA? You fill the hole with God. It's permanent. It's absolutely permanent. You know that? Do you know a relationship to God is such an extraordinary high that I would never even consider going back to alcohol? It's a high like nothing I've ever experienced in my life. I have done and seen more things in sobriety than I ever dreamed were possible. You know, I've stopped dreaming. I've stopped making goals. I don't know what to go for anymore. You know, would I go for sainthood? I'm like, no good at that shit, you know? I'm just not good at it. So I just put one foot in front of the other and watch things unfold. And let me tell you, the difference between me and those with less sobriety in this room is I've just seen more miracles. That's it. I've seen more miracles. And with every single solitary miracle, my belief in a higher power grows exponentially. Exponentially. You know, the first and foremost is that I am alive today. That is a miracle that is beyond anything. I should be dead. By rights, I should have just picked up that gun and shot myself. And I didn't. and I don't know what kept me from doing it. I don't know. That little voice in the back of my head had to be God, because it was not me. You know, I'm clean and sober. I am clean and sober today because guess what? I did this little thing called the steps. For those of you that don't know, we have actually had a textbook. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And guess what? All the instructions for getting sober are in this book. Right? Every single piece. First 164 pages, plus, guess what? The doctor's opinion. That's a bonus chapter, you know? This thing kept me alive. You know, it kept me alive long enough for me to start dealing with my fears and building a relationship with a higher power. Because really, when push came to shove, that's what it was. You know, I thought I was one of the most incredibly independent, self-sufficient women you have ever met in your life, right? Here's my discovery. I discovered when I got sober, I was absolutely, positively the most independent woman you had ever met, as long as you didn't ask me to do anything that I had a fear of. Like driving. You know, most people think independence comes with driving. I didn't. I thought, I don't need to drive. What do I need to drive for? That has nothing to do with independence. It had to do with fear. Fear. That's what it was. You know, I had built a whole slew of character defects that covered up all my fears. You know, character defects are easy. I can be as arrogant as you want, as selfish as you want. But you look underneath that arrogance and you see fear of rejection and you think, ooh, nope, don't want to deal with that. Don't want to deal with that. You know. So, you know, I'm considered a big book Nazi, right? No, I'm not a Nazi. Here's what I know. I know this book got me clean and sober. I know it saved my life. You know, and I know this disease today, more than ever, is life or death. So yes, I'm passionate about this program. I'm very passionate about the statement that says, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out their hand, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I am responsible. I am. You can't just save my life and expect nothing in return. How do you repay the fact that this program saved my life and I'm still alive today? How do you repay the fact that I have an extraordinary life today? It's not just an ordinary life. Those steps didn't just help me to stop drinking. Those steps gave me one of the richest relationships I have ever had in my life. It gave me my relationship with my higher power. Do you know what you can do with a higher power? You can conquer the world. You can conquer the world with a higher power. You can conquer any single solitary fear you have, including your fear of driving. Yes. My idea when I came in the program of getting rid of fears was that God was going to let me win the mega bucks. And then I would have a chauffeur, and the chauffeur would drive me around. Then I wouldn't have to deal with my fear of driving. You know, guess what God thought of that little idea? No. No. My higher power has a lovely sense of humor. When I have a fear, he actually wants me to get rid of the fear. He doesn't want me to avoid it, and he doesn't want me to walk my way around it. So what happens? Every single solitary fear that I have, one by one, decides to come up and rear its ugly head. You know that famous expression, God doesn't give us any more than we can handle? Well, I wish you didn't have so much damn confidence in me. I have seen the most extraordinary things in sobriety. I'll tell you that I spent the first year and a half trying to get rid of the jerk that I married. I thought, I tried to do several inventories on him and give them to my sponsor so that she would understand why I needed to get rid of him. And she said, no, he doesn't drink, he's not abusing you in any way, shape, or form. He goes to work, he earns a living, he's a decent guy. Do not make decisions like that in the first year of sobriety. You gotta be shitting me. If I didn't get sober to make these decisions, then what did I get sober for? You know, and she says, not to make that decision. Here's what I discovered. I discovered at about 5 years of sobriety that I was married to the most extraordinary man in the world. Not only that, that I loved him. Because you know why I loved him? Because I realized there were things about him that I married him for. I married him for his sense of humor. I married him for his wonderful, wonderful personality. I married him because he was so incredibly kind and generous to me. I married him because he treated me like a princess. You know? I married him because he kept me from being too intense, which is very hard to do. You know? And I realized at 5 years, I married him for those things. I didn't marry him for those things plus the other things I wanted to change him into. I married him for those things, and those were the things I loved about him. He was never going to be a financier. He was never going to be an executive. That wasn't who he was. And you know what? That wasn't what I wanted when I married him. The rules don't change when you get married. They don't. You know? He's the same person that I married with all the same characteristics. And you know what? They're incredible. Here's what I can tell you about this husband today. This is the meaning of love. The meaning of love is when I'm lying in bed sick and I throw up all over myself. And he comes in and he picks me up and he takes me, puts me in the shower. He cleans me off, takes off my pajamas and puts a new set on. He changes the bed sheets and all of the linens. He puts me back to sleep and back to bed, tucks me in, and cleans up the mess. Okay? Here was the news flash for me. Love is not about roses. It's about the day-to-day living and loving. And this man had it. This man had it, and I almost threw it away because I was drinking. It was only when I got sober that I was able to see what an incredible man he is. An absolutely phenomenal man. How do you end up with a man like that when you're a two-bit drunk? I don't know. It's got to be God. It has got to be God, because it certainly wasn't me. You know? Our first date was at Friendly's Restaurant, and I was trying to figure out who goes to a date at Friendly's Restaurant. They don't serve any alcohol there. You know? You know, the steps I was told would help me to come to understand myself and build a relationship with my higher power. And they were phenomenal. I can tell you that when I finished those steps, I felt higher than a kite. You know, I did not expect anything out of those steps except to keep me sober and keep me alive, and they gave me so much more. I was told that if I practiced the principles behind the traditions, that it helps me to get along with my fellow alcoholics, which at times can be trying, especially newcomers. And then I was told that if I learned to practice the concepts in my life, that it would help me to learn how to deal with people in the outside world. So, here I was, clean and sober, and now had 36 solid spiritual principles to live by. Can you ask for any more than that? No. No. it's a buzz. It's a real buzz. You know? I mean, all sorts of things have happened to me in sobriety that at first I took a temper tantrum about, and then when I got to the other side, there was a tremendous blessing. You know? I got fired from my job my first year of sobriety. 9 months, I was pissed. And somebody said, they can't fire you for filing a workers' comp injury. I said, are you sure about that? And they said, yes, we're sure. So, about 5 years later, I had a master's degree, and I had a workers' compensation liability lawsuit settled favorably for me. You know? And then I had about 10 people from AA come up and tell me that they would be my financial advisors. They all advised me that I did not have to pay any of my back debt off because it was written off. Guess what? I didn't pay attention to them. This program taught me that the right thing to do was clear the wreckage of the past. You know, it was not my fault that I couldn't make those payments, but let me tell you, every single one of those charges on those accounts, I had received the services for. I received the products. They were sitting in my home. Why should I get away with having those for free? I didn't think so. And so I paid them all off. And you know what? 3 years later, when I went to buy a house, the bank that gave me the mortgage said, we really, really appreciated the fact that you went back and paid off all your bad debts. That's why they gave me the mortgage, because I did the right thing. You know? I, needless to say, have learned how to drive fairly well, unless you talk to my friends. Yeah. I can actually drive on highways, you know. I drove all the way to New England, not in one swoop, but it was quite a little ride, you know. I have learned that fears are just something I have to walk through, and I can walk through them with God's help. And that's what this is all about. You know that black hole inside me? That was fear. I just didn't want to look at it because I was terrified, terrified. I would have no way of dealing with it. And guess what? In here, I do. In here, I do. I can tell you today, after all this sobriety, I do the exact same things today that I did in early sobriety. I have a sponsor. I don't always like what she has to say, but I listen anyway. I have a home group. I reach out to newcomers a lot. They are the lifeblood of this program. They deserve every single opportunity we can give them. As long as an alcoholic is alive and reaches out for help, I don't care how many times they relapse, I will be there to pick them back up. Because this is a deadly program. This is a deadly program. I lost a friend, 18 years of sobriety. She went out, 6 months later, she was dead. Okay? Still kills today. Don't want to forget that. You know? I got a group of rehab kids up in Umatilla, Florida. Have you ever even heard of Umatilla, Florida? I hadn't. You know, if I go up there and one word I say saves one person, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. You know, I've seen too many people die. You know, I lost my brother at the age of 57 to alcoholism. I lost my twin brother. They call him an Irish twin because we're exactly a year apart. I lost him at the age of 50 to alcoholism. You know. Today, my life is definitely challenging. As you can see, I walk around with two beautiful canes. right? They're cool, aren't they? I can actually hit people with them. Get away with them. You know? I actually have a handicap placard in my car. Somebody said to me once, oh, it's so cool. She got one of those placards you can park up front. I said, yes, it's really cool. Would you like the disability that goes with it? You know? They took me off my anti-inflammatories, told me I cannot take any anti-inflammatories anymore. So, voila. We have canes and pain. Yeah, a little tough, you know. I can tell you the toughest struggle has been in 2000, August in 2006, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. We have battled long and hard. I love him dearly. And he becomes more and more amazing every time, every month. Every year that we celebrate together. We'll be coming up on 35 years in April. He's decided to stop all treatments about a year ago. And I have supported him 100% in every decision he's ever made. He's considered terminal. And he decided he wants to be buried out in the backyard in the citrus bed. I'm not sure that I can deal with that, but I told him I'd do it anyway. You know, sometimes you just think I've been through a lot of challenges. What else could come my way? And you think, oh, you know, there are times when I look at him and I think, why not me? Why not me? I could deal. Why not me? His cancer came from pancreatitis. He never been drank his stupid strawberry daiquiris with alcohol in them. Oh, God. We are a pair. Some have told us that we should do a show called The Di and Charlie Show. His family calls me Princess Di and him Sir Charles. And you know what? Life's good. I don't care what happens. I would not trade one single solitary day of sobriety, of life, laughter, joy. This program has taught me more about love than it has taught me about anything else. Because from love comes everything else. Selflessness, right? Caring and giving. Generosity. You know? There is nothing more selfless than sitting across from a loved one and saying, I'll do whatever you need me to do. I will do whatever you need me to do. Because you know who's saying that? It's God inside you. It's your higher power that's saying, you can do this for him. You can do this for him. You can make a difference. And I am making a difference in his life. But I'm taking care of myself too by driving all the way to Umatilla, Florida. Life's been a blast in the program. Somebody told me that the second 15 years were better than the first 15 years. I told them that was BS. Well, I can tell you right now that's true. That is absolutely true. You know, I have such incredibly phenomenal people around me. Women, men, people that would stand up for me in a heartbeat. I called a friend of mine, the sponsee, 7 o'clock in the morning on the way to the vet's because I had to put my dog down. I said, could you please come with me? And she said, yes, come by and get me. That's a friend. That's what I get in LA. I get true friendship, true meaningful relationship, not because they give to me, but because it's mutual, because I was taught how to live life. This isn't just about sobriety. If it was about sobriety, I wouldn't have been out of here after the first year. This is about living life on life's terms. You know, in an early sobriety, it was about learning that if you take two Tylenol, your headache goes away. Did you know that? I didn't. You know, I didn't know that stuff. I got taught that stuff. You know, it was amazing some of the things I learned. I learned how to brush my teeth. I learned how to go to doctors. I mean, all sorts of really cool things. You know, I learned how to go clothes shopping. I still don't like it, but I learned how to do it. You know, that I'm supposed to, right? Today, I learned how to support the people in my life. I learned how to give to them selflessly. That means I never put my wants, my desires, my fantasies ahead of someone else's needs. Never. That's selfishness. If somebody needs something, I need to give it to them. But I'll tell you what I tell every single one of my sponsees. Don't you ever, ever put the oxygen mask on someone else before you put it on yourself. Because you'll be dead if you do. We need air to breathe. You put that oxygen mask on yourself first to breathe, to get that good air in, and then you help others. You know, that's the gift of the program. The gift of the program is all of the people who I encounter in every single moment, in every single day of my life. My hope is that I leave their life a little bit better off than when I walked into it. That means the cashier. It means the crossing guard. You know? It means the takeout person who doesn't even have anybody smile at them all day long and don't know what to do when you do smile at them. That's my hope. I don't know if it's always true that I lead people's lives better than when I walked in. I don't know that. It's simply a goal. It's simply a mission that comes from God, and I try every single solitary day to live up to that. If I don't, I'm not going to beat myself up over it, because guess what? God told me I'm not perfect. And the day that I am, it means that I've let go of him. I am today internally grateful for this program. I am here as an act of service to all of you. If one small thing I've said that came from my higher power can help you, that's wonderful. But you can't give me shit for anything I said, because it actually came from God. I'm not taking shit for what he said. Anyway, I am very grateful to be here. Thank you all so much for patiently listening.